resolution before you, the letter listing the denial from Linn County, and yet Marv Gloesch came before us and testified on our behalf at the last meeting, and you have my survey that I made of the six counties around the state. And I did want to point out one last comment, please, and it's a reference here it happens to be Ted Kennedy Jr., and I think it's more of a philosophical point than anything, I guess, please. This is dated here, let's see, February 14th of 1985 in the Statesman Journal. Bias against the disabled. Ted Kennedy Jr., who lost a leg, and I have put before you the ORS statute, which I believe the inference is a fair number of your senior citizens would be disabled, and I give you that ORS, please. It's in your file. Ted Kennedy Jr., who lost a leg to cancer 11 years ago, says discrimination against the handicapped, and inferred in that perhaps might be some of the elderly, please, and disabled, quote, is more profound than racism or sexism. The way that society has dealt with us in the past is to basically put the disabled in warehouses and throw away the key. The 23-year-old son of U.S. Senator Edward Kennedy said at a news conference in Connecticut, and he goes on to point out, please, the real handicap we face is one created by society. In summation, what we are looking for is for people, senior citizens in our case essentially, to have the right to choose to live within a city or without a city.
Excuse me. Sorry. We're under call of the House now.
Thanks so much.
Appreciate your testimony. The hearing on Senate Bill 376 is in recess. The committee is in recess. Subject to call of the chair.
I just want to know about the Harvard
today.
Graduation. Is it last Friday?
Thank you. It'll be this Saturday or Thursday at 9.
We'll be back.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll be going this Thursday at 9.
What house is he in?
I'm not sure.
You don't know what house he's living in?
No.
Six. And Marilyn Stutzman. Welcome, Marilyn.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Marilyn Stutzman, and I'm from Lebanon, and I'm here on behalf of my husband and myself. Mr. Jones gave most of the particulars. I just wanted to keep this very simple because that's the way I see that this bill is. I love the elderly, and I always have had a desire to create for them a optimal place to spend their last years. And I believe it is in those years, that they're stripped often of their choices, including where they will live. Families in certain situations determine those for them. As a home health nurse for the last 6 years, I have been in various group homes, some private, some certified, some residential zones, and some I'm sure were exclusive farm zones, but maybe they didn't know about it. And I can tell you that the quality of care is not governed by certification or is it determined by the zone. It is directly related to the caregiver. I could be that quality caregiver, except that I live in an EFU zone. I love the country. I love the 4.5 acres on which I live. But we are not asking to build nursing homes or add out buildings or infringe upon the farmers. We're only asking to be allowed to open our home to up to 5 elderly people. You might think of it as an extended family in the privacy on our own home. To be able to love and care and listen to the elderly and to make their last years happy, filled with dignity, will in return rich rewards to our family. It is more than just a job to me. I ask you to please consider to make my dream become a reality. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? No.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hill.
Do you currently have a residential home on your farm?
Yes.
You do. How many people live there?
My family, five of them.
Any elderly folks?
No, I'm in exclusive farm zone.
I see. Okay, thank you.
Okay, I'd like to call Russ.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Russ Nivon, Marion County Chief Planner for the County Planning Directors. I'll start out by saying I hesitate to testify against housing for the handicapped because I'm sure that's something that we do not want to discriminate on unnecessarily. The way the bill is written, however, it allows them as a conditional use. Conditional uses in EFU zones are typically non-residential type uses. If you have non-farm related dwellings, they are treated in a separate section, sub 3, and the law provides that they be disqualified and they be judged against special criteria for non-farm dwellings. It's not clear to me from this bill whether these residential dwellings for handicapped persons are farm related or whether they are non-farm related. They are falling in between in some other category, and the planners are concerned that we be consistent in terms of how non-farm related dwellings are handled in EFU zones. The criteria for non-farm dwellings require that they be located on unsuitable soils, that they not create conflicts for farm uses, that they don't materially alter the overall land use pattern of the area, the other criteria. These would come in under different sets of criteria and there would be no disqualification required. On top of all that, I think there's a basic question of whether or not handicapped folks have special service requirements, whether they're going to have the transportation that they need out in rural areas, whether they're going to have the access to the medical facilities, those things that probably could be addressed through the conditional use process, and they might be used at the local level as a reason for denying one if the circumstances did not justify it.
Mr. Chairman,
I think there's a policy question here as to whether these are appropriate.
Russ, on line 15, it says impose reasonable conditions. Isn't that, for all practical purposes, about the same as a conditional use?
Representative Parkinson, yes. By putting it in sub 2 of 215, you are making it a conditional use, and I recognize that. But that does not subject it to the criteria for a non-farm dwelling. It does not subject it to the disqualification. You could have a family with five non-handicapped people having to disqualify their residence, not be entitled to requalify for farm deferral, and the same dwelling approved under this bill could go in, would not have to disqualify itself, and could still be located in an EFU zone. There seems to be a discrepancy there. Unless somebody is representing these homes for handicapped as being farm-related, which I haven't heard.
Mr. Parkinson?
Russ, you're saying they wouldn't have to qualify. Are you talking about the special assessment?
Yes.
That's what you're talking about.
Non-farm dwellings now, when they are approved, have to be disqualified and pay the back taxes and the penalties on them, and they're not entitled to requalify unless they are reconsolidated with a large farm parcel.
Representative Traherne?
Russ, I think that the bottom line of the bill is probably on page 6 at the bottom. And it refers to ORS 215-213 sub 3 or 215-283 sub 3. Now, both of those are in the bill, but they're different qualifications. Would you help me understand what the difference between 215, 213, and 283 are, and why they're both listed there?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Traherne, 215, 283 is the EFU standard that applies to 34 counties that are not marginal lands counties. In those counties, in your EFU zones, the criteria for approving non-farm dwellings are no serious interference, no material alteration to the land use pattern, located on land unsuitable. In a marginal land county, in order to approve a non-farm dwelling, you have the two criteria, no significant increase in the cost of farming on adjacent farmlands, and the unsuitability of the soil standard, which is somewhat more stringent than the ones in 283.
That's 213.
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Russ, did you prevent this, present this testimony before the Senate committee?
No, I didn't.
You did not. Why not?
I didn't have an opportunity to testify. And I wasn't available to testify. Excuse me, I want to clarify that.
Okay. Further questions? Were we able to reach anyone from Senator Day's office? No, Senator Day was wanted to testify, but they just couldn't track him down.
He was on the House floor, if that counts.
He was?
Yeah.
No wonder you couldn't find him.
Senator Day strongly supports this bill. Anyone else?
Mr. Chairman, if I just may, as a concluding comment, if it's the committee's intent to allow residential homes for handicapped persons,
mm-hmm.
it would be my recommendation that it be included under sub 3 somehow, so that it falls under the category of non-farm dwelling and is treated consistently with other non-farm dwellings, yeah. rather than giving special status.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Burroughs.
Either that or I'm going to move it to revenue.
Why?
Why
Well, what I'm, we have a bill in revenue that would deal with the 1 acre of land under the homestead, but I'm not worried. I'm concerned about the whole issue of special farm deferral and that sort of thing that comes under EFU, and they could have a real tax advantage, and that's one little hitch I hadn't even thought about. There's a real question here on taxation. They should not receive the benefits that, I mean, it's a whole, I hadn't even thought about when we talked about your kennel.
Mm-hmm.
That really is something I think the Revenue Committee should look at.
Mr. Chairman. Representative Parkinson.
Russ, would you anticipate all these places would be getting the special assessment?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Parkinson, I'm not an assessor, but my understanding of the assessment law is that when a county approves a conditional use in an EFU zone, the assessor takes note of that and takes it off of farm deferral. But there is not the same provision for paying the back taxes and the penalties and the limitation on requalification that there is in the law for non-farm dwellings. In other words, the penalties and the regulations are stricter for non-farm dwellings than they are for just approving a non-farm use as a conditional use.
Mr. Chairman, to expand.
Representative Parkinson.
In plain words then, Russ, what if this were passed, the assessor would pick it up and would charge probably the building at an acre or something a true cash value, but they would not pay the penalty. Is that what you told me?
That's my understanding, but I'm not certain that that's the law. I can't say that I understand that law completely.
I don't think it's a very huge problem. I would not anticipate there to be very many residential homes sized that way. Maybe one or two, I think, is all we're talking about. Ah, Senator Day. The Marion County planner just trashed your bill, Senator Day.
Well, I shan't say that. I learned a long time ago, if you're in a hurry, if you're tired, I would appreciate if you pass it. The gentleman who introduced this bill is a constituent of mine who's trying to develop a rural setting for people that are in the elderly or handicapped, and I think if we do it inside the city limits, it ought to be all right outside.
Yeah, Senator Day, I think the question that's come up in the mind of at least one member of the panel is, would there be a tax break for non-farm dwellings under the terms of this bill?
Because
we thought not, but
because they're in EFU.
Well, we're just making a permitted use in there, and I see no reason to change the tax status if they're going to.
Mr. Chairman,
still not
well,
Burroughs.
LB, I don't think anybody wants them to pay a penalty, but I don't know if we want them to go on getting farm deferral tax breaks if they're going into other uses.
Well, I guess what is the purpose? The purpose is to give a rural setting to the elderly, and if they're still farming and meeting the test of farming, and we aren't changing the outside appearance of the house, what the hell do we care?
Okay.
I mean, that's my point. They aren't going to make anything off of it in a situation like that. And it, what would be the difference if you had your grandmother and grandfather come to live with you and of both sides of the family? I guess what I'm saying is if they meet the test of the farm income and they're still farming, they are changing the structure of the house,
right,
and they're accommodating that house where someone can live in a rural setting and enjoy it instead of being in a nursing home or a home for the aged. I guess that's where I come down now. You're right, they could get it deferred.
Just one question. That was one concern, and I, you know, the cause is so good. You hate to ask a question because
no,
it sounds.
No,
but the size of the house. I don't see where it says they couldn't build that.
It says existing structural.
Existing structural. Okay. They can't go beyond the existing structure. And
I'm groovy.
Oh, she's great.
You've always been groovy.
Does anyone else want to testify on Senate Bill 376? Open a work session on Senate Bill 376 and move it to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Question.
Discussion. Question. Would you call the roll, please?
Representative Anderson.
Excused.
Representative Burroughs.
Aye.
Representative Cease.
Aye.
Representative Vegas.
Absent.
Representative Hill.
Aye.
Representative Parkinson.
Aye.
Representative Drew.
Absent.
Representative Traeger.
No.
Aye. Carries. Thank you. Representative Parkinson, would you like to try dog kennels again?
Mr. Chairman,
I'd be prepared to move 2552, amend it with Senator Otto's concern in it, and send it to the Senate if that's amenable with you.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate that. My only problem is I don't think I can rely on it getting through the process.
Well, I can assure you that Senate Bill 55 will likely not be brought up again, nor will probably we devote any more time to land use this session. So I offer this to you, Mr. Hill.
I'd just like to place a question to Representative Traherne if he was perhaps mulling over whether or not he wished to place a minority report on the current version of Senate Bill 55. That does appear to be the obstacle. So I just generally place that question to the representative.
Mr. Chair,
you may not care to answer.
Mr. Chair, yes, I would be happy to answer, and yes, I would like to place a minority report on Senate Bill 55. I would also suggest, though, to committee members that I would like to present that minority report, or at least that proposal, to the committee prior to your action on the bill.
That would be better, yes.
And let you at that time make a decision on perhaps the committee would like to adopt it. I don't know.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Hill.
So, Representative Traherne, you would, if we have another meeting in which you could bring that forward, you would bring forward your concerns, your minority
My proposal, if you will.
Right, you'd probably do that before we'd have such a meeting.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Parkinson.
If you want to open that hearing, I'd take about a minute or two of the committee's time.
Yeah, let's do that.
And then if you wish, you can reschedule it. But I would like to explain.
Okay, let me open a public hearing on House Bill 2552. Representative Parkinson.
Okay, I mentioned a little bit before, but it was at the request of a constituent that wanted to put a little old dog kennel or continue with an EFU. And when I researched it, I found out that a dog kennel is not permitted. And it's also not permitted as a conditional use. You just can't establish them there. And I got to thinking that that's where they belong. Right now, we heard earlier testimony, but you can put a dog kennel in rural residential where you've got houses close together. The yapping dogs are going to bother the neighbors, etc. So I think it's public policy for the state. Dog kennels belong in the FU. I think it's a conditional use where the county government can say you can have one, but you've got to meet certain restrictions. You've got to have a good fence, a concrete pad. It's got to be a sufficient distance so that it doesn't bother the neighbors, that sort of thing. And so anyway, that's why I pursued it. And with that, as far as I'm concerned, people could ask me questions or you could close the public hearing. But I don't think a House bill will get through, so I've just kind of lost interest in that avenue.
Well, I think we're going to be here at least two more weeks. And if it does move forward, I would ask.
I would go for it, but I am unwilling to have that my only avenue, because I think I'm going to have a little 72-year-old man out there that's still having problems.
Well, I'm giving you your bill an opportunity to move it through by placing Senator Otto's priority within it.
Well,
Representative Traherne?
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Parkinson.
Could I respond to that?
Yes.
It would seem to me that it would make more sense to put my bill into Senator Otto's because his bills run the gamut. It's gone through the Senate. They've done their lobbying. All the work's been done.
It also came with a letter from the Senate President, and it also has a very broad relating clause.
Well, the relating clause, you mean in conference committee, is this your problem?
Yes.
In conference.
Correct.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Hill.
But in conference committee, the good guys outnumber the bad guys.
Not necessarily.
Then,
if
Mr.
I
Chairman?
Could, I didn't mean to be judgmental.
Your problem isn't with the minority report, it's in conference.
It's in conference. Senate conference.
Maybe that could handle, but it'd sure be nice to consult with Senator Otto a little bit. Also, to see that if he thinks of, we have no assurance that he would even go to his committee over there.
He wants the bill up.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Ickes.
It seems to me that the best course of action to assure that the dog kennels get taken care of, and I voted against it in the previous vote because I didn't want to add it to Senate Bill 55 and not because I didn't support the intent. It seems to me that the best approach would be, you know, we may not do anything with Senate Bill 55 at all, and I think that we need another avenue for Senate Bill 55 or for the dog kennel thing. And it seems to me that if you added it to Senator Otto's, if you got into conference, the first thing that would go would be the dog kennels. And however, if you added Senator Otto's into this, then you do go over to the other side and have Senator Otto, because he wants his bill working for the dog kennel bill. And I think that that's probably, in terms of passing it, probably the best option.
I think it's a clean shot, Representative Parkinson, and I would ask that staff prepare this and get it to the desk very early. Representative Hill?
I'd note that if the House bill is the vehicle, it would have to come back here for concurrence.
Correct.
And there would be a chance to review the contents at that time. So we'd be taking a look at the concurrence.
Would it be the committee's intention to leave Senator Otto's bill intact and then just add mine on?
No, it would be to amend your bill with just adding on the first page in section one a new K after J that would allow for the
problem is then it's no longer Otto's bill, because what he's after is an outright permitted use.
This would be an outright permitted use because you've rolled up section one. You've got ORS 215.213, and then you would add a new sub K for the breeding, kenneling, and training of greyhounds for racing. This identical language to the Senate bill. That would then be a permitted use. And then on inside, you're adding dog kennels to conditional use.
So his bill would still be an outright permitted use?
Correct.
My part of the bill would be conditional use.
I like conditional.
Correct.
For greyhounds, too.
Okay.
I don't want it with that conditional.
Then you don't have his
bill. When we don't have the votes. Representative Trahern?
Yeah, I think Mike, because I'm like Representative Burroughs. I think, two things, I guess. I don't like picking out the greyhounds and treating them separately.
Right, George.
And secondly, I like to see it as a conditional use of the local folks have some option.
George is right.
What they do.
And the other
thing probably would be true in Clackamas County as well.
Okay, so if we passed Representative Parkinson's bill, then it simply allows dog kennels as a conditional use. It takes
yep.
care of greyhounds as a conditional
that
use. Doesn't need amending.
Right.
And it's the only vehicle available to Senator Otto.
Mm-hmm. I'm with George. I am not going to support something that deals with just greyhounds, or if it includes conditional permission. He's right on.
Okay, Reverend Parkinson.
There's one other problem with the greyhounds. They need, it says training in there,
yeah.
and a
yes,
dog kennel doesn't necessarily allow training.
Right.
Correct. Representative Trahern.
I wouldn't have a problem with putting a training also in as a conditional use. But I we're talking about relating, in one bill, relating exclusive farm use zones, the other one relating
to kennels.
To dog kennels, yet they're both amending exactly the same statute.
Mr. Chairman.
And I would, I think Representative Parkinson's concern is accurate in that we'd be a lot better off if we amended 689.
Mr. Chairman?
I recognize that we... Mr. Chairman, let me finish first.
We're under calling. Okay. We've been under calling.
I recognize you have a problem with farm use zone, and is there a way around that?
Yeah, there's a way. I guess it's to pass this House bill and work hard to get it passed.
Mr. Chairman?
We'll recess the public hearing on House Bill 2552.
This is a very weird way to make car payments.
We've got to go back to the floor for calling. I'd like
reading
to come back.
Try
to finish those. The House Environment and Energy Committee will return to order. Representative, I'll open a work session on House Bill 2552. Representative Parkinson moves the dash one amendments dated 6/1/85.
That's right.
The effect of these amendments would be to make the breeding, kenneling, and training of greyhounds for racing a permitted use, a conditional use within exclusive farm use zones, as would be dog kennels.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Parkinson.
Also Pekingese.
Definitely. Pekingese and whatever.
Pomeranians.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, you explained the intent or the amendments or the effect of the amendments.
Right.
I think is, as including over only greyhounds, and as I read them, it includes all dog kennels.
That is correct, Representative.
Including.
All dog kennels, including. There's only differences that you talk about breeding
and training
for racing. Is there any objection to Representative Parkinson's motion? Hearing none, it's adopted. Representative Parkinson moves House Bill 2552 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Parkinson.
I think I'm supportive if I can carry it.
Absolutely. And we will expedite this, realizing that it is a House bill, and sensitive to your concerns, we will ask staff to put this ahead of other bills that need to be filed at the desk, because it is one of our last remaining live House bills. Okay, would you call the roll, Julia?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Motion carries. Representative Parkinson will carry the bill.
Mr. Chairman.
Elected Representative Trahern.
We moved the amendments. Can we move the bill?
Yeah, we did. That was the vote on the... I moved the amendments earlier, asked for objections. There weren't.
Objection.
And that was the...
As long as you're sure.
Correct, Julia. That was the amended bill that we sent to the floor.
Okay.
On the... It was no opposition.
Let them in it show.
And that was the amended bill that will go to the floor in an expedited fashion. We open a public hearing on Senate Bill 780 and call Vic, I'm sorry, I can't
Affolder.
Affolder. So what it looks like
so
from Tillamook County. Welcome. And we have a whole bunch of...
I'm not going to read all that. I'm Tillamook County Planning Director. I'm also President of the State Planning Director Association, and I will be very brief. I have testimony from Tillamook County Board of Commissioners, from the Association of Oregon County Planning Directors, and I have testimony from Ernie Josie, who testified on the Senate side representing the Oregon Association of Conservation Districts and the Tillamook County Soil and Water Conservation District, all in favor of this bill. And what this bill does, very simply, is that it permits aquaculture in exclusive farm use zones where it's simply currently not permitted unless it's grandfathered, pre-existing non-conforming use. And to be very simple about it, it's basically a housekeeping measure. We can see no reason why aquaculture should not be allowed in EFU zones. And I would respond to any questions you might have.
Any questions?
Yes, Chair.
Representative Trahern.
Would the term aquaculture include trout farms that someone might go to and catch themselves a trout for a dollar a piece or whatever they charge?
Yeah, that's a good question. The way it's worded, it could include that, but as a conditional use, you have a way of regulating or controlling what type of activities actually would be occurring.
Mr. Trahern?
Mr. Chair, is aquaculture a permitted or a conditional use?
conditional.
The way the bill now reads, it would be a conditional use.
By the place in the statute where it falls, right? See, our bill summary says permits, but it doesn't mean that, correct?
It falls under
permits as a conditional use.
Right. Under the conditional use sections.
Yeah, okay. Further questions?
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Parkinson.
I just would kind of like a definite answer as to whether the propagation of trout, these trout farms, whether it is allowed or not.
Would be regulated by the county.
Yeah, it would. I mean, is that a definite answer?
Well, it says propagation, cultivation, maintenance, and harvesting of aquatic species. And I would assume that would include your trout farms.
As a conditional use?
As a conditional use.
Representative Traher.
How would they determine the land class for aquaculture?
Are you talking from an assessing perspective? Yeah. Of course, this would not qualify, you would not get farm tax on this because it's basically non-farm use and farm zone.
Right. Mr. Chair.
Representative Traher.
How would that pond be assessed?
I'm not, Mr. Chairman, Representative Traher, and I'm not an assessor, nor do I work in that office. I assume that they would determine the value that a trout pond has or a trout farm has and assess it according to that value, but it would not be at that reduced farm rate that you get for farm uses. See, I might explain, Mr. Chairman, this, we originally had proposed that aquaculture be included in the definition of farm use. And legislative revenue raised questions about that, I think, partly because of questions now that Representative Traherne are raising. And to avoid all that, we decided to put it in as a conditional use where it would avoid the adverse revenue consequences, adverse taxation questions.
So the answer to Representative Traherne's question is that it wouldn't, however it's assessed, it would not be assessed at farm use value.
Exactly.
Public hearing and possible work session on Senate Bill 793, Senate Bill 572, Senate Bill 433, Senate Bill 52, Senate Bill 878, and Senate Bill 185.
Oh, I know.
Okay.
I know.
Okay.
I am. Well.
He's got 5 in the room. And George is not.
The June 5th meeting of the Environment and Energy Committee will come to order. We have a number of bills on the agenda today. They're not all ready to move. So we'll be moving on them Friday, possibly Monday. One bill I would like to move to the floor, Senate Bill 52. There are only 5 members in the room. Any of those members have any objections to Senate Bill 52 before I decide which one to move into?
What's it do?
Senate Bill 52 allows state agencies to participate in the energy loan program. The passage of this bill has already been anticipated in the governor's budget. It's also been anticipated by Ways and Means. Our,
Mr. Chairman,
our failure to pass this bill would result in at least a $300,000 hole. Representative Troop.
Mr. Chairman, not only do I not have an objection, but I would strongly urge the committee move on it. I think it's an extremely good bill and one the Department of Energy needs, and I'd like to see us move forward today. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'd move.
Okay, just I'll open a work session on Senate Bill 52. Representative Troop.
Move Senate Bill 52 to the floor of the House with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Troop moves Senate Bill 52 to the floor of the House with a due pass recommendation. Discussion.
Mr. Chair, I had some concerns about it, and I don't know whether they've been addressed, but some of the participating people I talked to, I requested that they contact the co-chairs of Ways and Means to come to some understanding as to how they were going to budget for this from biennium to biennium. If there's some understanding out of there, I'd be prepared to move.
I'll call people from the Department of Energy. Mr. Graney.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Michael Graney from Department of Energy and Dave White, Department's loan manager. I'd like David to address that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, we did talk to members of the Ways and Means Committee and found that their understanding is that, and in fact our understanding as well, the payments for these loans will come from the normal energy bill, which will otherwise have to be paid for that agency. When the project is put in place, that energy bill will be reduced, but the appropriation for it will not be reduced below the level necessary to repay the loan. So without any increase in appropriations, but rather some reduction, the payments will still continue to be made until the loan is retired. Once it's fully retired, then the entire savings will be passed on to the state. The energy appropriation will be completely reduced.
Okay. Further discussion on the motion?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Trahern.
We talked about some proposed changes in this. Have you prepared anything with the motion? Is there a motion?
No.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, Representative Trahern, I'm sorry, that may be a misunderstanding on my part. We did discuss the bill in several ways, but we did not prepare any amendments.
Any other questions of the department? Any other discussion on the bill? Any discomforture with the bill?
Yes.
Yes? Any other discomfort with the bill? We need this bill. I think I'll just recess the work session on Senate Bill 52. Sort of hold that. Hold your motion, Representative Troop, until we have our errant members.
Okay.
Well,
not to be, and I normally am. Today, no, that's all right. I'm the worst member.
Here you are. Let us for fun. Public hearing on Senate Bill 793. Sarah, you have some information to present the committee.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. On Monday, I met with two representatives from the Forest Service and a representative from the OFIC to discuss, I think, some facts that were either out there or not out there, or to clarify some confusion on what size of acreages would be affected in Senate Bill 793. And so what I prepared for the committee members is a memo mapping out the number of acres that would be affected by this bill. I prefaced this memo to state that the what I have will deliver to you is the acreage affected by Senate Bill 793 with the deletion of East Opal Creek and with the deletion of Battle Axe Creek from the scenic designation. So let me pass this out to you.
Okay, my comment that we're not anticipating action on this bill today. We need to absorb the information, I think, get some of the facts before us. Additionally, we received a letter from Bob Potter, who from 1971 to 1978 was the administrator of the scenic waterway system. He has addressed in his memo, which will be distributed to you shortly, a number of concerns that have been brought up about the measure, and he does have suggested amendments which appear to more carefully and better define the scenic waterway in question. He requests an opportunity to meet with the committee, and I want to grant him that opportunity because of his expertise and his long-standing background on this issue. So he has agreed to come before us on Friday. So we just basically have information to present to you. We would urge your objective review of it. No decisions have been made with respect to the exact way Senate Bill 793 would look. But as you recall, when we did reconsider the motion by which we had originally sent the bill to the floor, it indicated that the amendments would seek to achieve broader support for the bill, and it still is the objective. Any questions or discussions on Senate Bill 793?
Mr. Chair, could you share with the committee at least the direction that the amendments would take?
Yeah, the amendments, I think, as Sarah described them, are enumerated right on the top of the memo, would eliminate East Opal Creek and Battle Rock Creek from the bill. Additionally, there's a word headwaters in the bill that would come out. Then the exact number of acres affected in the area are listed for you. And Sarah did work with all parties to try to get the facts on the table.
Mr. Chairman, that lays the main stem in Opal Creek and Opal Lake.
That's correct. That's what I believe. And that also would be the effect, and you can see that the actual language that we'll be sending to council. Bob Potter.
It would also include Gold Creek.
It would include the main stem of Gold Creek, right. Just for the committee's information, my understanding is that the Opal Creek used to be called the Little North Fork of the Santa Ana. Basically, it has been seen and is known in the area as one river.
Mr. Chair, my understanding it used to be called Boulder Creek.
I haven't heard that. Boulder Creek, it's been called Boulder Creek.
The main, historically, it was the main fork and then Boulder and then
I see. That was Georgia Tia speaking from the audience saying that first it was the Little North Fork and then it was Boulder Creek and then it was Opal.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Sarah.
The representatives from the Forest Service also indicated to me that as far back as 1934, the creek that you were discussing indeed was called Boulder Creek.
Okay. History lesson. Okay, anything else on Senate Bill 793? Okay, I'll close the public hearing. Is anybody in desperate need to talk in the audience on 793?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Anderson.
Do you still request amendments 48 hours in advance, or is 24?
Our rules are over 5 o'clock today, so, you know, basically we'll be on, the 24-hour rule doesn't apply, and I would assume the same with amendments. We obviously won't have 48-hour warning. Won't be possible. Okay, well then I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 793. Now then. Mr. Phil, do you like Senate Bill 52 real well?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. I need to pick up a little bit.
I think it's a great bill,
lady. You're in good company, Larry.
Oh, Senate Bill 52.
Right.
I remember this bill.
I'll reopen the work session on Senate Bill 52. There's a motion before us made by Representative Troop, which is to send Senate Bill 52 to the floor with the DUPAS recommendation. The bill is needed, has been anticipated in the governor's budget, has been anticipated by Ways and Means, will save the state some money in the long run, and those cost savings have been budgeted, so it's a real
Mr. Chairman, this is the bill that the Solar Oregon Lobby has been advocating for?
I don't know what their position on the bill is, Solar Oregon Lobby. They're not here.
Mr. Chairman, I believe there's...
They support it.
I have a letter out
okay.
there.
We have a letter, even. Ron has a letter. Representative Ekus has a letter.
I have a letter from them. Strong support from the bill. It's from Fred Hewitt, State Coordinator, expressing strong support from the Solar Oregon Lobby for the bill.
Oh, yes. This is an excellent bill, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Dated May 20th, 1985.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Fraher.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to amend the bill if I could.
You want to amend the motion?
Yes.
Okay. Just a second. All right. Representative Fraher.
On page 1, line 14, I would like to delete the words any officer or employee and replace those with the deputy director. My motion.
Representative Trahern moves that in line 14 of the printed word, of the printed bill, the words any officer or employee be deleted, and in their place the words the deputy director.
Mr. Chair.
To your motion, Representative Trahern.
Mr. Chair, this refers to the delegation of authority of the director. We heard testimony that there are times when the director is out of town or not available to take action, and sometimes that's held things up. And certainly I understand that, but I think it would be going a little far for any officer or employee, particularly any employee, I suspect, of the department to be able to exercise and discharge the director's name and on any power, etc. And it seems to me that if he wished to delegate that authority to the deputy director, I would have no problem with that. But to allow a part-time janitor to have the, because he's an employee, to have that kind of authority, I'm sure it would not be exercised in that to that extreme, but that's the reason.
Well, I recall you brought that up in our public hearing on the, yes, on the matter. Representative Anderson, what do we call it on?
I concur.
Okay. Representative Hill.
I would ask if we could have brief justification for the proposed language in the bill.
You are the deputy director, aren't you?
Yes, sir. Mr. Chairman, Representative Hill. The reason that we requested that language was on the advice of the Attorney General's office that as the statutes, most of our statutes are written, including our tax credit and loan programs, they say the director shall grant a tax credit, grant a loan, and that with the volume of work and number of decisions involved, it's literally impossible for one person to do that. The language that we have suggested is common to a number of the statutes of a number of agencies, and I believe the Water Commission bill, Senate Bill 287, has identical language that's before the legislature this session. So our intention there is to be able to give the director the flexibility to get the decisions made that need to be made promptly by the program staff who have the expertise to do that. In fact, our expectation would be, and as we have done in the past, when the director delegates, he does do that in writing. If there's limitations on the scope of the delegation, that's clearly indicated and that's kept in our official records.
Well, but this, Representative Traherne's motion would provide some flexibility, would it not?
Minimal. It would not significantly improve the situation from what we have right now.
Because the Department of Energy spends a great deal of time maintaining its turf, I've noticed, this session. So, you know, maybe it wouldn't be inconsistent to make sure you have all those powers at the director and deputy director level.
Mr. Chairman, the amendment would not be an improvement in terms of the responding to the concerns raised by the Attorney General about flexibility with our statutes. I might add, too, that the questions the Attorney General raised go to not only the final decision as to, for example, whether a tax credit or a loan is given, but also many of the underlying decisions that program staff need to evaluate in administering and implementing the statutes, questions that, as the Attorney General characterizes them, I believe, are discretionary as opposed to simply ministerial. But there are literally hundreds of these that have to be made every day. And if the director had to make every one of those, the agency simply could not function.
Yeah, well, I happen to agree with Representative Traherne that on a loan to a state agency, I think it does require the review of at least the deputy director. I certainly will support Mr. Traherne's motion. Is there further discussion on the motion? Julia?
Mr. Chairman, how many one deputy?
Mr.
The effect of the motion would be to allow you and Len two folks rather than not three or four or five or ten, but two.
Well, either of us could make the decision, yes.
So, Mr. Chairman?
Representative Akers?
Just to clarify a point that you raised, Section 1 doesn't necessarily specifically refer
Yeah, our administrator just brought that to my attention. It would be for, I guess, all the...
Mr. Chair, if I might, I might give an example that has just occurred. I and my staff spent some 5 hours in negotiation on a $14 million loan with three attorneys and their accountant on one paragraph in that loan, but we could not make the decision to make the changes that were in that. Instead, we have to wait until we can obtain the director's approval, even though the loan already exists and it was merely a correction to one paragraph in about 60 pages of documents.
Representative Farron, did you understand that?
No, I understand.
Well, the point is I guess that it would, the effect of your amendment would affect all of the operations in the entire department, not just the state loan program.
Chairman,
Mr. Troop.
Let's sort it out. The language that they proposed in the bill also affects all the operations of the department. The example they just gave of negotiating for 5 hours on obviously a very closely worded document, I think probably should have the director's approval. That doesn't bother me a bit. Or the deputy director's approval, if the director's not there. So I guess I really would stand with the motion.
And now let me just ask, you do not have this delegation ability at present. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, the Attorney General has told us it is unclear. He thinks that with respect to the loan program, we do not. With respect to other statutes, other programs, it is not clear. But we do not have a general delegation clause like many agencies have.
Yeah.
And that is why their office suggested that we include this in this bill.
Anderson suggested we could just strike the whole thing and leave it unclear.
It's an option.
The only reason probably, Mr. Chairman, that it's unclear is because we didn't ask them that question. Sometimes you don't want that answer.
Is there another generic class of employees, the name for which could be substituted in this act?
Mr. Chairman, there is. You could use the term perhaps either management service, that would include most of the, that would include besides myself, the division administrators and many of the program supervisors. So that would give us more flexibility.
How would that be, Representative Gray? Management service?
Mr. Chair, a question. Of the total staff in the department, how many would that include? Give me some idea of what we're including and excluding.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Trahern, I believe about 20%, about 20 out of 100.
How many employees do you have?
Approximately 100.
Oh. Representative Trahern withdraws his motion and replaces a motion to insert after the, on line 14, after the word employee, the words in management service. I guess in the management service. Mr. Greene?
What was that, Mr. Chairman?
Would be to, after the word employee, insert in the management service.
And I believe, my understanding is that management service includes the executive service.
That is correct. I have researched the issue earlier on another
right.
issue.
Right, that was
management
my
service
assumption
is a term that
in responding to Representative Trahern's question on the number, and
right.
and that would be very helpful, giving us at least that much discretion.
One for
Representative Trahern.
With the numbers that you earlier suggested, would that wording still be the same?
Yes, that's correct.
The management service is a class that's exempt from collective bargaining, for example. Representative Parkinson.
The question, Mr. Rainey, it says the director may delegate. How would he delegate? Would it be a written memo?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Parkinson, typically it would either be a written memo for a specific assignment or I think another approach might be to delegate it through the job description, position description, but there would be written delegation in some form.
Okay. Further discussion on Representative Trahan's motion? The motion is to insert on line 14 of the printed bill, following the word employee, the words in the management service. Is there any objection to Representative Trahan's motion? Adopted. Representative Troop's motion is, I guess it was amending Representative Troop's motion, amending the bill. So now Representative Troop's motion is before us, which is to send Senate Bill 52 A engrossed as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Just sort of for what it's worth as to whether we really ought to look at this program after 2 years. You know, whether we're having, whether we, you know, can determine, of course, the fats in the fire, we've already expended the money, as to whether the actual expenses are meeting the payments and so on.
No.
I believe this kind of legislation is going to take another year or so to get up and running with it, but maybe we ought to take a look at maybe 4 years, but at some point we want to determine whether this is a wise thing that we've done. I would suggest maybe as a compromise, maybe a 4-year sunset on it, so we have to look at it.
Compromise between what?
Between 2 years and some other thing.
Mr. Chairman. Okay, Representative Hill?
I think it'd be good legislative practice to look at ongoing programs, but it's not necessary to put a sunset on the program in order to take a careful look at it. I think that's what you're leading up to, Representative, and I don't see it as necessary. Certainly we can take a look at it, work to improve the program, but you don't have to kill a program, put a death penalty on a program in order to get around to looking at it again.
Representative Anderson?
Mr. Chair, I guess if the state of Oregon is obligated to make these payments, there's no way you're going to kill it, but at least we can modify it and say, you know, it's either good or bad. Do what you're doing, expand it, or cut back, or let's not do it anymore. And I don't know any other way than to do it than to put a sunset somewhere on it.
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Hill,
the bonding limit would limit the program. In fact, we will have to act to enlarge or extend the bonding limit. So we do have control over the program through the amount of money that's available for it. But we don't have to, this gearing down and gearing up and gearing down and gearing up of sunsetted programs, I think is disruptive to the program. We don't need to take that approach in order to improve the program. But I think that when it comes around again, we'll be looking at the bonding aspect of the program, and that will allow us to exercise the oversight and control without disruptive nature of the sunset.
Any other committee members with any views? Tom went to a conference call in revenue.
I checked many of them to see.
No, he went to a conference in revenue. He said we could get them if we wanted them. I don't think so. Well, Representative Troop's motion is before us. Any further discussion on Representative Troop's motion? Julia, would you call the roll?
Representative Anderson?
Would start with.
Don't we rotate anymore?
Aye.
Representative Cease?
Aye.
Representative Ickes?
Aye.
Representative Hill?
Aye.
Representative
Parkinson?
Aye.
Representative Trahan?
No.
The department will present a report to the 64th Legislative Assembly, right?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. We'd be happy to.
Thank you.
On the record.
Aye. Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr.
Representative Troop will carry the bill.
Mr.
Oh, what do we have?
Let's see, what was that? No, no, no.
Not to get rid of all.
Well, why don't we have a public hearing on Senate Bill 433. Do we have anybody signed up? John Lobdell, former Public Utility Commissioner Lobdell. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Lobdell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is John Lobdell. I'm Vice President of Northwest Natural Gas Company. Senate Bill 433, as originally introduced at the request of my company, embodied one single public policy question, and that was, to what degree would the public at large participate, have knowledge in, and be able to examine a potential takeover of an Oregon energy utility. The bill as it came to you from the Senate embodies a second public policy issue. That's the question of the method of financing a local government with regard to franchise fees on utilities. I will give you a quick explanation of the first public policy issue, and at the conclusion of that, urge the committee to separate the two issues so that they may rise and fall on their own merits. With regard to the potential takeover of an Oregon energy utility by a third party, under existing Oregon law, if an Oregon utility moves to acquire another Oregon utility or a part of an Oregon utility, they're required to secure the approval of the State Public Utility Commission. Senate Bill 433 would require the examination of a potential takeover by any party, whether they were an Oregon utility, a non-Oregon utility, or a third party of interest. Secondly, it would require any person intending to take over an Oregon energy utility to submit an application to the commissioner, which would determine, among other things, the applicant's identity and financial stability, financial ability, the source of funds to be used in the acquisition, the applicant's experience in operating public utilities, the applicant's plan for operating the public utility, and how the acquisition will best serve the public utilities, customers, and the public interest. And it would require the commissioner to examine and investigate that application and to receive and issue an order within 19 days of its receipt. Now, the 19 days is geared to the federal law on that issue. It then provides through that process the Oregon public at large, utility customers, through Oregon regulators, an opportunity to at least examine the proposed transactions, and fairly probably not stop it, but to try to maintain whatever interest they might have in the final outcome. My utility hired outside counsel, the board of my utility hired outside counsel to examine the entire question of an unfriendly takeover, and this is one of a series of recommendations that that council has made. If there are any technical questions dealing with the bill, Mr. Dave Hayhurst is here and will be happy to join me at the table and respond to them. Again, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, we urge that you separate those two public issues. Mm-hmm.